From listener-supported KTOL, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, June 21st, happy day after solstice, everyone. I'm your host, Andy Klein Gunashish, and thank you for joining the conversation on today's show. Well, Buddy Tabor's new album, Earth and Sky, is now available on most popular streaming platforms, but of course, that album was first released many years ago. We're going to be talking to the one and the only, Colette Costa, about the Buddy Tabor project and that it's keeping his music alive for a whole new generation of listeners. And then let's talk about tourism and what it's been like to live a life in the tourism business with the founders and operators of one of the most successful tourism businesses in Southeast Alaska, Gastineau Guiding. And Perseverance Theater's Star Summer Program is open for registration with four intensives to choose from in July. We're going to be having those conversations, plus Garden Talk and Star Party, all coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And in the weather, a few showers in the forecast for this weekend with cloudy and partly cloudy skies predicted starting up on Tuesday, but no complaining about the weather is allowed after the past few weeks of glory that we've had.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
And due to unforeseen circumstances, Theater Alaska's Pride and Prejudice will now begin performances tomorrow, Saturday, June 22nd, at 7 p.m. at the Treadwell Trail office location. There will be no show tonight. And for more information and updates, follow the Theater Alaska on socials or visit theateralaska.org.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
KTO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands and now covered over with the buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
When the news is hard to hear, you want to hear it on KTOO. Together, NPR and public stations tell the story of the entire country from everywhere across the U.S. We enable people to hear one another's voices across borders and the political spectrum so that you can be more empathetic and informed. As you're able to this spring, make a contribution to KTOO so we can continue this important work. Give at ktoo.org. Thank you.
Searching for the truth, searching for the truth in a world full of lies. Young poet, got no excuses, got no excuses, got no alibis. All we got left of you are these teardrops in our eyes. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, the earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky. Love the mountains, you love the sea, like endless lines of poetry. So saddle your daddy's horses one more time. Ride that painted mare across the great divide. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky.
Well, that's the title track of Earth in the Sky, Buddy Tabor album that is been around for a long time for Buddy Tabor fans, especially those of us here in Juneau, but is now available on streaming services, and that's part of the Buddy Tabor project. And Colette Costa is joining me now. Colette,
okay.
How you doing?
I'm all right. right. How are you?
You can get on mic, or are you going to just stay off mic there?
How this works. I'm busy texting everyone I know that I'm on the radio, Mom.
Well, it's an exciting moment to be
on
the radio.
I do have a face for radio.
That's how I got into the business. So let's talk about the Buddy Tabor project. So
yeah,
what's pretty cool about this, right, is that you're just kind of you and is Justin Smith is the other one of the other people intimately involved in this. Who else is involved? Is that you guys kind of spearheading it?
Anyone we can drag in. But this has been Justin's big push, and he's been corralling us, not necessarily against our will. But just, you know, you always need that person to drive the bus. And it's been something we've talked about for ages. And thankfully, he kind of took up the reins.
Yeah, and he's perfect. He's got the studio. He's so technically knowledgeable. He's such a wonderful musician himself. So for him to go through, is he dealing with like the masters? Is he doing remastering and that kind of thing?
No, I think he's just doing the digitization.
Okay.
But it partly started that he had this recording that he had made at one of Buddy's last concerts, which was in Gustavus. And he had recorded it, and he and Buddy had talked a bit about trying to do something with it, and the time never came. So he's been working on remastering that for an eventual
live concert. Wow.
And I believe there are a couple songs on it that were never put on an album. So a couple unreleased Buddy songs would have been new at the time.
Well, we'll talk about this in a second, but let's back up and let's just talk about Buddy Tabor. Let's talk about what he meant to you as an artist, why you identify so much, why so many people identify so much with him. He's maybe a little bit of his background. I mean, he was a house painter that was also
came up in the 70s. I think he worked up on the pipeline for a while and eventually found his way down here. Had been sort of a wandering musician for a bit and really dug into the whole thing. I think when he was here while he was, you know, starting a family and, you know, met Jeanette and got married and started really earnestly doing songwriting and, you know, much like a holy trinity of, you know, Bob Dylan and Townes Van Zandt and the other one I can't think of right now. And really started doing a lot of songwriting and immediately, you know, got into with the folk scene was, you know, I'll be very good friends with Bob Havitt and Pat Henry and also became sort of a mentor for other songwriters. He really encouraged other musicians and performers and songwriters, which is, of course, how I ran into him through mutual friends.
It seems like that was a big part of why people are still so tied to his legacy and music, even if they never met him. He was, you know, they're tied to someone who's in that legacy of him nurturing music in Juneau.
Yeah, and you know, obviously he was kind of a cornerstone at Folk Festival for ages. And he wrote songs that I think everybody can relate to on some level. You know, just songs about regular folk and obviously a lot of politically minded songs, a lot of songs that had to do with much bigger themes, you know, of life and death and a lot of angst. And I think he and I really connected on an anger level. Like I'd never met anyone who had matched my level of being angry at everything all the time, except he was more, which is amazing to me. And I mean, like for him, true righteous
injustice. You know, he hated those things. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right and wrong.
Yeah,
yeah.
And wrote songs about them, and wrote really wonderful, great songs about them. And you know, I think touched on a lot of things that everyone can relate to.
Do you know? You may not know this number. Do you know what the number of the albums in his library
12.
Is? There's 12 albums in his library.
12 official. And then I was just talking with Betsy, who did the production on, I think, all of them. And she's like, actually, there's one we don't talk about.
The Black Album. Yes.
And I mean, his first official one was Cannery Lights, which very few people have. And it's on tape. I don't think it ever got digitized. So, and I think we're looking for a copy. If anybody has a decent copy of that one, we'd like to borrow it and digitize it at some point.
Tell me about how he went about this. Was there a production facility? Was his stuff distributed? Did he have contracts off and on or?
I don't think there are contracts.
No, like,
well, actually I told an untruth earlier. Albert McDonald did most of the productions. Mm-hmm. Betsy now owns Studio A, which was Albert's originally. So Albert's studio was in the basement of the Arc Decor building for about 1,000 years. I think before the building existed, his studio was down there. And
the building was built around his studio.
It's like a Dr. Seuss novel. Right. And that's where a lot of the local musicians did, you know, all of Panhandle Crabgrass did their albums down there. I did my, let's not talk about them.
It's such a resource. Albert was just, yeah, down there ready to go. Right?
And the studio was about the size of a closet. And they did most of, I think Buddy did most of his recordings down there, certainly in the early days, on tape, very analog. And I think Albert did most of the mixing and mastering, you know, and later on when other people were doing it and things were getting a little fancier, he would send them off to Bob Hamilton up in Whitehorse. I think some Whitehorse people are tuning in today
because
they just heard about this. Sorry about the late notice, but, you know, things move slower in Canada.
You can listen to the 7 o'clock show.
You guys will get this in about an hour and a half.
It repeats in a few hours.
So we got our Whitehorse peeps who are finally kind of tuning into it and are also very excited to be able to access his music.
What was his, we'll listen to another track here in a second, but what was his typical instrumentation? Was it just him and a guitar typically with a little background singing, or did he go with full instrumentation sometimes?
It varies a bit. Most of them are guitar, bass. He would often have John Hartle sit in on mandolin, usually Ferguson or Banghart on fiddle, all local mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
I think you hear Sean Tracy and quite a few doing harmonica on this album in particular, I think. And then fill-ins as you went. And then Albert did, I think, 95% of the harmonies on the songs. And they had like this whole, like Simon and Garfunkel thing. Like the two of them, their voices were just like historically suited to go together. Mm. And in between them wanting to murder each other, of course, which is like just Simon a natural.
Yeah, same thing. Mm-hmm. Well, let's play another track off of Earth in the Sky. I was going to play, what do I got queued up here? Living the Blues?
Do Poets, Thieves, and Liars. Yeah, okay, that one on
that's
there.
That's the first track on the album, Poets, Thieves, and Liars. This is Buddy Tabor. This is Earth in the Sky, and Justin Smith and Colette Costa have been working on getting these things digitized and put on all of the streaming services. Mm-hmm. So they're on Spotify and
I think everything but Bandcamp.
Okay. Everything but Bandcamp.
Yeah. Like all Apple Music.
Pandora.
Probably. Maybe.
Yeah. Like, yeah. All that stuff.
The so stuff where you can talk to your phone and play stuff.
If you've got a favorite streaming service, you can find Buddy Tabor stuff on. And if you can't, go to the place that you can. I know it's on Spotify. Let's listen to this one. It's called Poets, Thieves, and Liars. This is more from Buddy Tabor, and this is Earth in the Sky. This is the latest album that's been digitized. And Justin was just saying another one's going up in a couple weeks.
Yeah, right? We'll talk about that one
in a minute. Right after this. This is Poets, Thieves, and Liars.
This place, it's always come down to just a little simple fate. Her heart was red earth, her house was red stone. I can still feel her spirit rattle down in my bones. Her skin, it was brown, her eyes like the night. Her hair was like ravens in the midair of flight. Black wings that danced with the rhythm and rhyme, like the jingle you get out of quarters and dimes. There's thistles and thorns, there's stickers and briars, there's poets, thieves, and cheaters and liars. There's horses for riding, fences to mend, and I doubt if I'll ever get back here again. She was a moment of grace for this poor wretched fool, but my heart was so hardened and I was so cruel. Now loneliness my house guest, I'll never be free. You eat everything and then refuse to leave. There's thistles and thorns, there's stickers and briars, there's poets and thieves and cheaters and liars. There's horses for riding, fences to mend, and I doubt if I'll ever get back here again. Now with one morning's wake, that it was fair,
I looked all around, but she just was not there. Like a dream that evaporates up with the sun. The love I once knew, I knew it was done. There's thistles and thorns, there's stickers and briars, there's poets, thieves and cheaters and liars. There's horses for riding, fences to mend, but I doubt if I'll ever get back here again. Now the night is so long and my bed is so cold, and my arms seem so useless when there's no one to hold. Young men, don't you do the things that I do, or your heart will be empty like the howl of the wind. You know I made her cry.
A little bit more of Buddy Tabor there off of Earth and Sky. That one is Poets, Thieves, Liars. And you were saying that's one of his few done in 3/3 time. Or
it's one of his few waltz songs.
Yeah, waltz songs. Yeah.
He didn't do a lot of those.
Yeah. And we were just describing, too, about speaking of timing, that there were all these kind of anomalies about how Buddy played and the way he played and how other musicians and people recording with him had to adjust.
We would be at, you know, we'd have these music circles sometimes at people's house, just sitting around having some dinner, and everyone sitting big playing tunes and going to play a song, Buddy. And yeah, and, oh, here we go. And he'd, you know, launch into one of his songs and everyone would be like, yeah. And there'd be 10, 20 people. They're all playing along. And then slowly as the song goes, people just like dropping out, dropping out. Like they get this look at some of they get this look like, what the hell?
What's going on?
So it was like musical chairs, but like that so it was just down to like him and Albert again.
And they understood. Like, they knew they joined. Yeah. That's really amazing. What do you think it is about Buddy's music that still lives for you and still resonates?
Well, partly is just, you know, he was a good friend of mine. So just hearing the music is just like hanging out with him again, which I think a lot of us have this story. I couldn't really listen to his music for quite a while after he died. And so this has been a really interesting launch back into the whole world of it and just remembering how much I love it. I mean, this kind of music speaks to me. You know, I'm not the biggest bluegrass fan. And I don't play a lot of folk music, but there's just something about his stuff. And also, I think he's got just one of the most interesting voices. I mean, his actual voice, mm-hmm, I think, mm-hmm, is. And if you don't think he's good, try singing a couple of the songs. Because when I was recording Scratch and Flea, it's like, oh, this is a cute little like bluesy Southern kind of thing. He does more octave jumps than Julie Andrews. And you can't even tell he's doing it. And I'm trying to record this, and I was like, I physically can't sing this song.
Wow.
And so we had to change a lot of things. I just think he was much, much more talented than he would let on. He would always uh-huh, downplay gravelly voice in this.
Well, maybe it was just a natural, obviously a part of it is just a natural thing too.
Yeah.
That, I mean, he must have been aware that he was doing some of it, but maybe some of it was without his awareness.
Sure. And of course, he was also fairly humble about the whole situation.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stoicism.
Big enough egos important. As it is.
Earth and the Sky is the name of the album that is now available on all the streaming platforms.
I think it's our third one.
Third one is what I've got in my notes as well. But another one, what's the next one coming up? You said that Justin was saying
in about 3 weeks, Justin just texted me. He said the next one coming out is Abandoned Cars and Broken Hearts. But it could be Broken Hearts and Abandoned Cars. Excuse me for getting that backwards every time. It's the dyslexia, which is one of my favorites. It's got, I mean, it's for me, it's banger after banger. I adore that album.
Now, you were talking a little bit about how, in a way, this isn't just doing it chronologically. You're sort of curating this in a way.
Yeah.
What are the other two what are the first two that you went with, and why did you decide to go with them in that order?
Ooh, was
first
the
one was Nightingale?
Was
or
Meadowlark.
Meadowlark, I mean.
Meadowlark
sorry, yeah.
is kind of like his Pet Sounds. I mean, it's the Buddy Tabor album.
Okay.
It's got the songs most people are most familiar with, and there's quite a few. Dress That She Wore and She Walked in Beauty and all these like prototypical Buddy songs. And it's also what I call a very approachable Buddy album. You know, as he got older and made more albums, they tended to explore different material.
And got into dark material.
Some got kind of dark.
Yeah, yeah.
And
do you think a lot of his stuff was autobiographical, or do you think that it was
at least semi?
Yeah.
Yeah, or of other people he knew,
right?
You know, and the world that he saw around him, and I think a rapidly changing world. I think the songs got a little more personal along the way. And he, you know, what I also appreciated was he wasn't afraid to go into that dark territory, because there are a lot of people who are there, and I think they felt a kinship for that, knowing that somebody else was going through that experience as well.
Well, it's awesome that you're doing this. We'll talk more about it as more albums come out. We'll have you back in. And one other thing, though, of course, you're also the main hat you wear. One of the many hats you wear.
Give me that.
Give me that hat. Give me the Gold Town Theater hat. What's going on at Gold Town Theater right now?
You know what? I'm so glad you asked, Andy. You are so prescient. It's amazing what a professional you are. And you wouldn't know what to look at you.
How did I think of that? I don't even know.
Yeah. You know, I want to do a quick shout out, because we are doing, we have two more shows of the Clink at Macbeth that we showed during Celebration, which is being sponsored by Sea Alaska Heritage. And it was sold out. We had to turn people away at the door during Celebration, which we're sorry for, but they did have advance tickets on sale. Speaking of which, there are advanced seat reservations right now. There's a link on our website, goldtownnick.com. It's a free reservation. It's a pay-as-you-can donation show. It's tomorrow. It's tonight. It's tonight at 7, and it's Saturday at 4. And this was a production of Macbeth that they did, I think, 20 years ago in conjunction with the Rasmussen Theater in Washington, D.C. And they got permission to record it. They finally got a grant to edit it all together into a filmed play, basically. But it's Shakespeare's Macbeth, all in Clinkett. It's got an incredible cast. A lot of them are still living here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it's, a free show tomorrow at 7, Saturday at 4, and
tomorrow at 7 or tonight at 7?
Nope, today at 7.
Tonight at 7. And tomorrow at 4.
Thank you.
Yes.
Friday and Saturday, whatever
Friday and Saturday.
Days those are.
That's the day we're in.
Yes. And then next week, very excited about this. We are opening a new film called Fancy Dance, which stars Lily Gladstone, who was nominated for Flowers of the Killer Moon last year. But it was co-written by a Junoite who no longer lives here. It was written, directed, produced, starred, and made by almost entirely Indigenous women. And it's an incredible film. And we're opening that Friday the 28th. We only have it for a week. So please come and support local heroes.
All right. Well, Colette, thanks for everything you do for our community, including this really great project, the Buddy Tabor Project, the new album that has just been uploaded in the last week or so, Earth and the Sky, is now available on all the streaming platforms you're familiar with. And another album's coming out in about 3 weeks. So you got that to look forward to as well. And keeping the memory and the music of Buddy Tabor alive for new generations of people that maybe never
talking about it.
Absolutely.
And there's a website, Buddy Tabor Project. There might be just buddytabor.com. And then on IG, it's at Buddy Tabor Project.
Check out
some info there.
Colette Costa, thanks so much. We're going to listen to Garden Talk next. In this segment, KTOO's Coy Plesnek talks with Ed Byarski about what gardeners should be thinking about as July approaches.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for joining me this morning. Happy solstice to you.
And same to you, Chloe. It's another beautiful day in paradise.
It is. And it's almost July now. So what should Juno gardeners be thinking about these days?
Oh, pulling some more weeds. They're growing really well right now. And of course, they're competing with our flowers, our trees, our vegetables, all of that. Trying to keep them under control. But we can turn them into fertilizer, take those weeds, put them in a bucket with water, throw in a handful of seaweed, and let them ferment for 2 weeks so you get this brown, nasty, slimy stuff. And take that out, dilute it about 5 to 1, and use that to fertilize our plants that we want to grow. So the weeds can be useful. They're pulling up nutrients out of the ground, and we can turn them into new plant fertilizer.
Very cool. And are there certain plants that maybe should be going in the ground now that haven't been planted earlier, or people, you know, as they're harvesting, maybe seeding new things as well, you think?
Things like the mustard family, broccoli. Certainly we can plant some more broccoli now for later harvest. You know, suddenly we'll have a lot of broccoli and then a little break, and then hopefully broccoli into well into the fall. Kale anytime can be planted. We're kind of pushing the edge. I did reseed a patch of a box of carrots. That one, we'll see. Soil is nice and warm, so things are going to sprout quickly along with the weeds. So again, that's an advantage. And I've just finally got my greenhouse recovered after rebuilding it after our winter tragedy. So been planting tomatoes and cucumbers in there, and they are looking good. So I'm very enthusiastic, and even planted some grapevines for a few years in the future.
Well, awesome. And how has the heat been affecting your garden, if at all? It's been so warm downtown, at least for us. Is there any noticeable differences, or is that pretty average comparatively, you think?
It's close to average as far as temperatures go, but it's been dry. So that's probably the bigger concern. They like the temperatures if they have enough soil moisture because they're pumping moisture up as they grow. So I mentioned the carrots, and I've been watering my carrots so that, because they're rather delicate at this stage. And of course, the new transplants, I put in some Chinese cabbage and some broccoli. So making sure those are watered. Container plants, watering is critical, because you can watch, I mean, you can almost watch them wilt if they are not being watered. And again, on these warm, sunny days, if the container isn't large enough, you may end up watering in the morning and watering again in the evening. And at the same time, we may need to be adding or mixing in some liquid fertilizer or powder, which would dissolve in the water, to be giving them a boost too, to keep them growing steadily and hopefully flowering soon. It's garlic scape harvesting season, which is an exciting time of year. I've got my last two garlic bulbs from last year. So the new garlic scapes, which come up out of the garlic plants on the hardneck garlic, are coming up. They're tasty. Use them just like you would green onions, but with a garlic flavor, for everything from pickling and stir frying and making pesto and flavoring anything. I've got folks who are kind of almost waiting in line. One lady was saying she just likes to munch on the garlic scapes during the day. And her husband said he approves. So it's kind of like if you have a partner, you might both want to make sure you eat at least similar amounts of garlic.
That's awesome. I'm going to be craving garlic now. That sounds really good.
Come on out and get some.
I might have to. Awesome. Well, thank you, Ed.
You're welcome.
A little bit of garden talk there with Ed Bajarski and Chloe Plesnack. Always awesome to hear that. Well, coming up next, let's talk about a life in tourism. We've got with us Bob Janes, who's the president and owner of Gastineau Guiding Company, and also Amy Bologna, who is the office manager at Gastineau Guiding. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you,
Amy. Yeah, it's great to have you here. Yep. And let's just talk a little bit about, first of all, full disclosure, I work in tourism myself. I volunteer here, but I work at Alaska Seaplanes, and I also am on the board of directors for Travel Juneau. So just full disclosure of that fact.
That's a pretty full disclosure.
It's a pretty full disclosure. Yeah. So and you know, we want to talk to you a little bit about the really vital role that you play here in Juneau, as operating a really vital company, and a company that's now celebrating its 30th 30th anniversary. Congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment. We've all seen Gassineau Guiding grow through the years, I'm sure, for those of us that have been here for those years. But, you know, tourism is also a hot button issue right now. So we're going to try to avoid the hot button part of this and just talk a little
how
bit about.
How can we avoid that?
Yeah. Talk a little bit about just the business side of it and and how it goes. So tell me about when you founded Gassineau Guiding, what your sort of original concept was and what how that originally looked.
Well, Don and I, 30 years ago, you know, we lived over in Douglas and we watched the cruise ships cruising by us a couple times a week back in those days. And we thought, now, you know, if we could just figure out how to make a dollar for every person that was on one of those ships. Well, time has changed. And, you know, I got my CDL in a school bus the day before I picked up the first group to take out to what is now the Outer Point Trail, but what is now the Rainforest Trail, actually.
We put
passenger fee money into building the designing and building the Rainforest Trail, and it became a commercial trail, which we still use, a beautiful trail that the community loves. So 30 years ago, it was just an idea of taking people out, walking in the woods and enjoying the nature that we love so much.
And that was the first tours. It had nothing to do with boats.
Nothing to do with boats.
No kayaks, no boats, no getting out there, no whale watching, nothing like that.
No, that came 10 years later as we realized that we really had to figure out how to make some money at it because it was a little tough making money just doing walking tours. And so we got into the boats and we've been doing the boats. Oh, probably what's 80% of our business now is boats.
It's still a hiking company at its core.
But we're still an outdoor hiking company, walking company, and that's what we really.
I've certainly had lots of friends who either wanted to do something in the summer, part-time job, retired from the state, became guides for Gassineau Guiding through the years, right? I mean, it just sort of seems like that's a big pattern. But Amy, you came up to be a dock rep originally about 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, for a different tourism company. I flew up the day after I graduated from college, initially just thinking it would be a seasonal job.
Where'd you come up from?
I went to college in Reno, Nevada, and I'm here 10 years later as a member of the community now.
What was the thing that kind of hooked you in after that first summer that made you actually stay?
Well, you know, the rain was actually a little bit appealing coming from Northern Nevada, where it was foreign to me and I was kind of enchanted.
We don't get that.
That's worn off now, of course.
It's worn off now. But initially it was just the staunch differences between where I grew up and this landscape I was just in the middle of.
Yeah, right. And then of course, like a lot of us, get families start growing and things like that start happening and friendships develop and you just become part of the community.
You know, I still work with many of those people who I met that very first season 10 years ago. There's still many of my friends have worked in tourism, still work in tourism, and we're all around.
You're just chiefs now.
We're not dock repping.
You're in charge now.
Yeah. But I also, I feel really confident in standing up and really talking about how my job in tourism has positively impacted my life. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm a single mom living in Juneau and raising my daughter exactly the way I want to.
It's a great place to raise kids.
Yeah,
I loved raising a daughter in Juneau as well. Now she's out and about and doing all kinds of stuff. Bob, just to talk a little bit more about how Gassineau Guiding has grown, it went from those walking tours to how would you represent the size of your company now and sort of your core business that you do now?
We are a big, complicated company. I never thought it would be that way, but we have over 140 employees in the summer.
About there. Yeah. We have 10 boats.
10 boats. We have anywhere from young people that are starting out on the docks to, I think Richard Stokes is our oldest guide. You may have talked to him before.
Dick Stokes.
I think he just hit 85, 84.
Yeah, the range of employee ages from 16 to their 80s is incredible.
Wow. Wow. We have a whole group of mentor guides that come back every year, and I think they come back because they love sharing the experience as much with the new people that come on as with the people that come and visit. It's a wonderful combination.
And in a peak day, about how many people are you kind of servicing through these boats and
is that
employees?
Servicing a fair word to
yeah,
say?
I don't know. Yeah, or just, you know, I don't know, working Andy, with. Yeah. What
do we, maybe 30 tours we send out in a day. We're a boutique company, so small group tours, you know, no more than 20 on those tours. But
boutique little company of about 600 people.
300 to 600
big day.
People. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Wow.
More than one would ever imagine, but we try to disperse them. And we still try to give everybody that real connection. You know, our groups are small, and that's what we tout. That's what we brag about, and so that's what our guides are able to do, is connect directly as walk-on guides. They're with their group the whole tour, so they get to really know their people pretty well over a course of 5 hours.
What are you finding that people, when they visit here, are wanting? Kind of, what's the number one thing people are wanting, or is there one?
I think that just everyone has this dream of Alaska, right? They dream about coming here, and just seeing, like, living out that bucket list kind of dream is what people really want. And we're able to provide that. You know, we have rainforest, we have the animals, we have the glacier, this wonderland we live
in. So whales, bears, glaciers, mountains, all whole, that stuff. Yeah, right.
The whole Alaska mystique. I'm taking my first cruise this year on the Danube with my wife in about 2 weeks.
Are you on a Viking cruise?
Where you are,
yeah.
And
they'll never stop mailing you. You'll get a magazine a week for the rest of your life.
Well, here's the thing. I drive through town now, and I am trying to decide what person I want to be.
Oh, right.
Walking around a town or a village or a city in that part of the world.
I agree. I always try to play it so cool when I'm a tourist somewhere. Like, I'm not a tourist.
No, right? I cannot find an outfit that doesn't look like every other outfit.
Soak in the culture.
Maybe I'll just take it in and get myself one of those hats that you see.
Right.
I don't know.
Matching sweatsuits.
I want to be the perfect tourist.
Yeah.
I don't want to step out in the street in front of anybody. I don't want to, make any mistakes in terms of the wrong ticket for the wrong tour.
That never happens.
There are so many things I don't want to do wrong.
Well, I mean, in that way, and again, I don't want to stay away from getting too much of an endorsement of anything that might be considered a hot button issue. But what do you think are the things that the town has kind of done right as it's been handling more and more tourism coming into the town? And what reminded me of that is when you spoke about someone stepping off the curb. It's like, okay, well, now we've put up some guidance on the
out. You know, we've done a lot right. It comes in small doses, but it comes over time. We've built beautiful seawalks. We've found ways to disperse people. We built trails. I mentioned the Rainforest Trail. That was built with passenger fee money. And we'll continue to do things right if we can slow down and figure out how to do them right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Keep up with a wave. You know, it got a little out of hand over passing COVID and coming out of COVID. None of us quite remembered how to do it anymore.
Did you find that coming out of COVID? I was going to ask about COVID, how it affected it and coming out of it.
It was rough going through COVID and it was rough coming out of it. And Amy, would you say this is our first year we've really...
I feel like this is the first year since COVID that it just feels normal.
It's
again.
Adjusted.
Our staff is back to normal levels. It just feels right again.
Yeah. Everything we did for the last two summers was recovery.
An adjustment to that.
Adjustment, readjustment.
Right.
And I think the whole mentality of the town of Juneau was the same way. We were all readjusting to something that we had forgotten how to manage.
Yeah.
And how to live right.
But to speak to your point, Andy, about what the town of Juneau is doing right, I think that we're really moving towards striking a good balance and allowing the infrastructure of the community to grow while we're kind of keeping the numbers of tourists at a bay for the next 3 to 4 years, allowing, you know, companies and infrastructure and housing to grow in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
She snuck that one in, didn't she?
She did. That was a little bit. That was good. No, I mean, you know.
It's real, though. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And definitely a position that you guys would have.
We are on top of that. We feel like we're leaders. We want to be leaders. We live here. You know, these are our trails and our roads and our waterways, too. And I've got to tell you that I'm very proud of the organization that we've started on the water, Southeast Alaska Whale Watching Association. We're really working hard as a group of whale watchers together to, I guess you'd say, behave ourselves on the water.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it.
Seeing each other less as
doing the right thing
and more of a community.
Yeah. So that has just come following COVID. A couple of years of forgotten practices that we're reinvigorating. We had a meeting at the beginning of the year, an all captains and crew meeting, and every company sent every employee to that meeting. And it was really well done. And I have a lot of hope that we're going to be able to get a lot of those problems figured out in the next few weeks.
When you say problems, are you talking about, I mean, just like
complaints, just
crowding around spots where there's interest, either whales or
communications
like that
between captains, movements around the whales,
taking constructive criticism positively and creating change that's maybe needed.
Mm-hmm. Everybody in the industry sees the need for that. We feel it in our guts. We want to fix it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming in and just talking to us a little bit about this. It's really, you know, it's such an integral part of our community. And then sometimes, you know, if you're not in the business itself, sometimes you don't kind of know the perspective of people that are in the business. And coming from, you know, sort of two different areas, a more recent arrival, of course, 10 years in Juneau, you're You're a long time Junoite at this point, but Bob, someone who's seen
60 years. Somebody went to me this afternoon for some knowledge that only I would have known because I was taken aback. It was 60 years ago, 55 years ago that I would have learned it. Why are you asking me? Oh, I think I get it.
You were there.
You were there.
Yeah, I did get
it. That's right. Well, Bob Janes, who's president and owner of Gastineau Guiding Company, and Amy Bologna, who's the office manager at Gastineau Guiding. Thanks so much for coming in and just talking to us a little bit about what's going on from your perspective in tourism right now in Juneau. It's great talking to you.
Great talking to you.
Okay, thanks so much. Let's hear a little bit more from Buddy Tabor here. Here's Livin' the Blues.
Searching for the truth in a world full of lies. Young poet, got no excuses, got no excuses, got no alibis. And all we got left of you are these teardrops in our eyes. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, the earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky. Mountains, you love the sea like endless lines of poetry. So saddle your daddy's horses one more time. Ride that painted mare across a great divide. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky. Lives are like the flowers of the field, they bloom, the seasons change, the wind blows, and then one day we're gone. No
earth in the sky, earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky. We embrace the unexpected of life's great mystery. Standing in acceptance, it's then we are set free. Free to love you through our pain. Free to love you through our tears. Free to love you with the passing of our years. Earth in the sky, earth in the sky, earth in the sky. Nothing lasts forever but the earth and the sky.
Well, it's a little bit of Buddy Tabor. And coming up next, we got Perseverance Star Program. We're going to be talking about with Rio Alberto, who's here. Rio, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always great to see you. And great to talk about all the great stuff happening at Perseverance Theater. But Star, the Star Summer Program is such an institution.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many kids. My kid went through it. So many kids have gone through it and just gained so much from that program. It's awesome. Are there changes that are happening this year versus last year or things like that? Or are you guys keeping on a similar track? Or tell me about how you're focusing this year's the Star Camp.
How it's going, how we're figuring it all out. Yeah, well, we're back again for another summer of Star, building kind of on the program as we kind of reinterrogated it and tried to figure out, you know, how are we being of service to the community in the best way we could be. And so a few years ago, we started doing these intensives and really getting kids a chance to like, okay, maybe production shouldn't be the goal, but maybe process could be the goal. And the idea of play and imagination and, you know, all the things that, you know, come along with teaching theater that we see now. So, kind of keeping with that same model, only this year, broadening it to meet some of the students where they're at. You know, we've got some really, really intelligent young minds here in Juneau. And so we're doing our usual intensives. We do a week-long playwriting intensive. That'll be July 8th through 12th. We'll do a week-long acting intensive, July 15th through 19th. And then July 22nd through 26th, we're doing our musical theater and production, which is the standard as we usually do. But this year, we are including a two-week directing intensive for students. We've got a number of students here that are like, you know, really interested in theater and being with their friends and hanging out. And we know that the theater is a fun place to be.
Yeah, so,
we like hanging out with our
classic
artists.
Theater geek. Okay, you know, it's like, you know, just totally into theater.
Very
and that's
that.
What you're into.
Very very loud. They have weird colored hair before everyone else. You know, it's like it's a whole thing. You know, and so we have a number of students that are really interested in that, but maybe not so much being on stage, maybe not so much, you know, like getting the stories down, and maybe, you know, they're like, I don't want to be backstage either. And so this director's track kind of is also about opening up to some students who may not understand the role of a director in the theater, right? Like, especially when you're young. I grew up doing theater, summer camps and everything. And my idea of what the director was kind of what the community told me it was. And the community at that point in time, golly, what was that, 20 years ago probably when I started? You know, at that time, the director was kind of like that was the god of the space, you know, like very, that was the voice of authority. They were the producer, director, casting director, designer of everything, child wrangler, lunch lady, bus, you know, it was all of the things. And so the idea of what a director actually does kind of gets a little fuzzy.
Well, I love that you're doing this. I think it's such a cool thing because I think that when people as a kid, if you hear about a theater, oh, there's a theater camp. Well, it's going to be acting. It's going to be this. Oh, I don't really act. I don't really, you know, I'm on the spot. Or maybe it's just not doesn't align with what you the different things that you might do. And it just opens up this whole realm of all the different skills it takes to really have theater function.
Yeah. And the role of the director can be defined as like you're the facilitator. You're responsible for like bringing together all of these different voices and this story. And you're tasked with, you have the responsibility of honoring all of these different spaces in the room. So, and that's what we're teaching to the students, right? It's like you now hold this responsibility, which, you know, at that age from 12 to 18, you know, it's like these kids, they want responsibility. And I'm very clear with my students too from the onset. I don't know how to talk down to you. So I'm going to treat you like a person because you're a fully realized person. Your experiences are kind of limited at that point, but you're a human being that's capable of thought and you want this responsibility. So we're going to teach you about what it means to bear that responsibility and work with your classmates, your cohort, your friends, your ensemble to like, you know, the way I see theater, again, I'm going to get really woo-woo about this because I've been doing this for too long. But, you know, when the theater, you know, when you're creating a show, you're creating a world on stage that is either the world as you see it or the world as you wish for it to be seen. And for a director, that's a tremendous responsibility. You're accountable to your community, to your audiences. And so how are we bringing students along in that understanding? But then also saying, you know, when you audition for a show or if you want to move forward in any other space with theater, you really can understand then what the director is asking for. Also, you know, being more well-rounded in each of these things, musical theater, playwriting, production and such, it makes a smarter performer. You understand the importance of hitting your mark for your light. You understand why you need to sound a certain way or why you need to project your voice. You know, you understand why the movement was choreographed just like so, because you're being of service to a story of a collective shared goal. So yeah, it'll be fun to see what they come up with.
Even if like acting is like the thing that you feel most in tune with, doing the playwriting intensive is going to inform you through your life as being an actor.
Right.
And because you understand the challenges of telling a story on paper, and you also understand when someone's writing something, how they might be trying, how you would as a playwright anyway, try to indicate how that should be acted.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
You've been on stage, right?
A little bit, tiny, tiny bit. Yeah, just as a kid mostly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you get that thing when you're like, okay, I've got to get up on stage and I have to just walk across the stage. And for some odd reason, you like forget how to do that.
Right. You're like, heel toe.
And you're like, I guess my right arm and right hand move at the same time. No, this is wrong.
That is so the eyes of an audience upon you really does do that to you. Absolutely.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And so, you know, getting kids comfortable with like, of course, shaking all of that away. But I have found that I'm a better actor because I understand playwriting and actually lighting design and lighting, being a lighting technician. Like the realm of lighting is how I kind of like filled my time between acting gigs, in addition to producing and like starting to coordinate all those different things. So yeah, truly, you just become more well-rounded. You're like, oh, the playwright is doing their best to make me feel like a human being on stage so I can kind of relax a little bit. This isn't Shakespeare. This is a line that's saying the dog got out. You know, it's like, or something like that.
Yeah.
And every year, you know, like we come in with these, you know, we have the values that we lead with. We have the goals that we have for the program. But ultimately, it's about supporting the kids and their own self-determination. And like, they're going to teach me a lot of stuff this summer that I had no idea about. And it's going to come out in the form of these, you know, 10-minute plays or skits, whatever they'll create. And kind of also to your point, you know, we start with playwriting because that's sort of, you know, we're like, okay, well, let's gather, let's come up with a story. Let's just practice making stories.
Like, where does a play start?
Right.
It starts on a page.
Yeah. And last year we had students that signed up for playwriting that then they were like, okay, a week wasn't enough. I learned how to build this story, but now I want to be a part of it. I'm going to sign up for the acting camp next week. And so then I get calls from parents on Thursday and Friday saying, is there room for my kid next week? Right. How do we figure this all out? And I say, great, come on in. Yeah. And then the same thing from acting where they're like, oh, okay, I've done the playwriting and I'm the acting. I'm actually going to step away from the acting now, but I want the piece that I wrote that first week to be produced next week. And my friends are doing stagecraft and lighting. We have, a young lighting technician and designer from Seattle coming down to teach with us, Chandler Eichley, who I've worked with in the professional circuit down in Seattle for a few years. And he's wonderful and is super excited about teaching kids. But now we get to offer that. So then it's not then just about like what we can do within our program. But then that's a group of kids that learned some of the basics of how to design lighting. So then at the high school or at some of these other, you know, spaces in the community where they want to create, you know, that's another set of hands and another mind that can potentially contribute to that process. And help it continue to grow and evolve.
Do you have other teaching artists coming in as well? Or tell me about the other teaching artists.
Yeah. So for our playwriting course, we have Aurora Belke. She is born and raised in Anchorage and now works with, the Met out of St. Louis, but is a young playwright and a playwright for young artists and young audiences. She actually wrote, we did a small director's lab production presentation of Founders Keepers, which is a play about 5-6 grade girls that have to rewrite the Constitution after the apocalypse. It's hilarious and very funny. And she, because of how deep her experience is working with kids, she's really great with teaching playwriting specifically for this age group. So, and it's great to always bring another Alaskan artist back home to work with us and kind of develop our talent pool here locally. So Aurora's coming in for playwriting. We've got Grace Goodyear, who was in our production of Little Women, played Amy in Little Women here 2 seasons ago. Also born and raised in Anchorage, now living and working out of Chicago as a theater artist over there, coming to teach acting again. And I can get really in the weeds about, you know, how we teach acting in such a way, but they come from an intimacy coordination background, which includes a lot of understanding of consent and boundaries and how we engage in the space and also build self-awareness and kinesthetic awareness. And at that age, when you're like about to enter high school, it's like, yeah, you're a human being person and the things you say and do have an impact on other people. So
such a great learning thing for so many parts of life.
Exactly. And like, it's very effective in theater, but even if you never do theater again outside of this, you'll at least have an understanding that your words and actions have an impact. Mm-hmm. And so bringing Grace in for a second year is going to be really awesome. Musical theater and production, we've got CJ Lawrence, who is wrapping up a gig down at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Spring Awakening right now and taught with us last year. He's another young professional that I've worked with in the Seattle market for a few years and, you know, has come up and taught with us last summer, coming back to teach kids musical theater. He's really passionate about the instrument and the voice and giving kids like a very basic foundation of tools so that they can have a healthy sound, right? It's not about sounding like someone else, but it's about sounding like yourself in a way that you can replicate as many times a week as you want to. And the kids loved him. He did some private coachings with students from last summer throughout the year. So now it's like, oh, he's coming back to town again. They're excited to start up their in-person lessons with him and he's going to teach. And then we've got Kylie Ferguson and Noah Carlson were on staff with us last year, coming back for Star. Virginia Roldan, who runs the program over at Juno Douglas High School, is going to come and teach with us. And then myself, Leslie Ishii, is going to join us. Artistic director Frank Delaney will probably pop in. It's kind of all hands on deck, and bringing folks in and
cast of all stars.
Cast of all stars.
Good for Star Camp. Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of the nuts and bolts. So it's the one thing is, it looks like if you want to do the directing intensive, you kind of have to decide that because it runs concurrently. Is that right? With the playwriting and the acting?
Absolutely. And, you know, let me talk about that because I forgot to mention one of the new members of the team in addition to Chandler is going to be Zetra Goodlow. She is a director and theater educator based out of Texas who I'm connected with doing national advocacy work with Theater Communications Group. We were both a part of a young leaders program called The Inheritors, where we were talking a little bit about like the field as we see it moving towards the future. And looking at, you know, the inheritors, the next generation of youth and early career professionals that are going to be stepping into this. She's going to be joining us for the 2-week program. And the way that's going to work is that you opt into the directorship, but you work as a director with a playwright and you learn about how you're a part of that process. So you're a part of the playwriting course through the lens of directing, where the playwriting instructor will talk a little bit more in depth about the crafting of the story. The director will hear about that and then will separately go and start to learn about, okay, now we're hearing the playwright's intentions. Here's how you communicate with the playwright and here's how you honor that on stage. And then the second week of directing overlaps with the acting week. And that's when it's like, okay, directors, you've got a script. Now you've got your peers as actors that you can actually work with. So you're still a part of the acting intensive, but your role is a little different. So it's 2 weeks, but we've got some of our older kids in like the 14, 15, 16 age range are going to be opting into that.
Well, so, yeah, it's so cool to talk to you about all this stuff. We're running out of time.
I know. I told you we have
plenty to talk about here. So anyway, it is the Star Camp. If you want more information, you can go to ptalaska.org. You can also email Rio at ralberto@ptalaska.org to get more information on Star Camp. If you've got kids from the ages of 12 to 18 years old that are interested, it's an amazing thing. Can't recommend it highly enough. Rio, thanks so much for coming in. That's going to be it for Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.